beginning to a Friday edition of the Roundtable. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, it's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're joined today by the Times Union's associate editor, Mike Spain. And nice to see you, Mike.
Good morning.
He was doing a boogie while the music was on.
Did you hear that boogie woogie
back
there?
That was quite invigorating music.
That was. That was happening music, Daddy-O. And Rosemary Armeo from the Albany School of...
SUNY at
SUNY,
Albany.
That's right. SUNY.
A major educational institution in the city. I'm getting ready to talk at International Women's Day this Sunday.
That's exciting.
At the Alpaca Gallery over at Sage College. Women's Day, March 8th at 3 p.m. Mary Darcy is also speaking.
An alum, you know.
Yes, an alum. That's why I mention it. And the mayor of Albany will be there to introduce us all and great congratulations to wonderful women in this area, and then also to talk about all the work that has to be done.
That's great. And
are men allowed in, or is it women only?
Yes, they're allowed in. We're an inclusive
right.
gender.
Right, enlightened men are allowed. And speaking of that, Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Well, good morning, Ray. I think it's a good morning, but Raymond just handed me something that is scaring the hell out of me.
He's going to get right into it.
Exactly. Before you get scared, let me just say the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage, wamc.org/roundtable. Today's post is 3615 panel. And I was going to save this one, the hypochondriac portion of the program, for later in
the
show.
Do it up front because I intuitively know that this
is going
to be...
We all knew why this story was...
I included it for Alan's benefit because I know this will frighten the daylights out of him. And, I'll let you set it up, Alan.
Okay, you ready here? Prepare for heart attack risk from spring forward.
This is from USA Today.
Uh-huh, good. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Attribution.
Detroit, Mondays are bad for your heart, and particularly dangerous is the Monday coming up, according to the University of Michigan study. In it, researchers found a surge in heart attacks, 25% more compared to other days in the first full workday after the spring forward time change. Okay, and although precise reasons are tough to nail down, it seems clear that the hour of lost sleep during the switch to daylight savings time plays a role, said University of Michigan cardiologist Dr. Hintergurm.
That's easy for you to say.
GURM. It's G-U-R-M. Yeah. The change we see is subtle, but we know when events happen that increase stress levels, heart attacks go up, said GURM.
Okay, first of all, 25% increase is not subtle.
No, that's not subtle.
It's a low number, so I mean, they didn't have a lot of numbers in there.
So what?
So I mean, a small sample size?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but what this saying is, after the time change on Monday...
Yeah. You may be
Alan, as the leader of the organization, I think you owe it to all of us to give us all the day off. We'll go to network. You know, to protect us.
Well, the problem really is that if you made all Mondays Sundays, then Tuesdays would be the heart attack day. Mm-hmm. You see, it's all about reentry. It's all about reentry. I was trying to explain to some people this morning when I was looking at this that, you know, I'm a big Freudian, and I truly believe that Freud was right, that our early lessons were what happened. And if you went to PS 75 without your homework,
right,
you know, on a Monday morning, and you knew that you shouldn't have watched Maverick, but instead you should have memorized the last stanza of the Star Spangled Banner, which Mrs. Andrews made you do.
Maverick, this is like a history lesson.
Yeah.
No, you would not have lifelong anxieties as you re-entered. Now the space program. God.
Okay, this is
he's
not
rambling.
This
he's
is
rambling.
Not like a history lesson. This is like James Joyce sort of reassociation.
No, yeah.
Continue. No, continue.
But the space program has a whole category of people who are called re-entry expediters. These are people who, when you're coming back, they're the expediters who get you back to Earth.
Okay? They tell you all the things that happened while you were gone?
No. These are the people who are responsible for your return through the atmosphere and everything else. Well, we need re-entry expediters, in my opinion, you know, for those of us who have bad moments on Sunday nights and can't sleep on
Sunday. I don't think it's every Sunday. The time change days are really stressful.
Why is that?
Especially in my house. My mother never got it right. I have been to school at like 4 in the morning, went to work because she set the clock back the wrong way. She's forbidden to touch any clock in the house this Sunday.
I mean, time, time is an artificial construct, and therefore it should not be an issue for anyone.
Well, the real question is, if spring forward brings up an extra 25% in heart attacks, then how about fall back?
Well, it says that. There actually is a decrease. That's part of the study that you looked at.
Now
the Tuesday after fall back is like the lowest day for deaths ever.
Well, that's probably why they do it on Sunday morning, so that you can just be late for church or something like that. Instead of being anxiety. Right.
But they say the way around this is to, decrease... Get ready for it by decreasing your sleep amount by 15 minutes for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
In other words, that way you'll be more likely to have your circadian rhythm uninterrupted.
I'm wearing one of those Fitbits that are also popular now.
I threw mine out.
Yeah.
And it keeps track of not just your movement during the day, but sleep at night. And it's really fascinating. Like, I always thought I slept great.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you know, there's light sleep and deep sleep and periods
How
that you wake
How does this thing
up.
Check your sleep?
It measures pulse wrist movements.
Interesting.
So, it's pretty accurate.
Maybe you have apnea.
No, I don't think so.
Well, some people do.
Sleep standing up, and you'll be better. You'll sleep better.
Like a horse.
Like a horse.
That's right. Well, let the record
has
show.
Gone to the dogs.
It is now 9:18. The show went off the rails at 9:12.
Yep.
No, I think this is probably more important to most people than anything else. Who
We're
wants to die? Nobody wants
Monday
to
morning.
Die.
Now, what would be some advice you'd have for somebody on Sunday when they realize that they're going to re-enter on this particular Monday? Is it maybe just do some yoga on Sunday night or relax
yoga?
Or memorize the last stanza of the Star Spangled Banner?
No, I like it. I like all of that.
Watch Maverick.
How about a little sleep aid?
Hmm.
How about a little sleep aid?
Something to make them
drowsy. I don't. Years ago I did, and then I weaned myself off, and I've never done it.
I'm looking for
just
a little
let me know when you guys
right
are
now. I know.
Ready.
Let's go
We're providing
on.
It, I think, to some people.
Very nice.
Okay, let's talk about the Chechens.
Well, first of all, you saw what happened, and we have to touch on this before we get to some meteor matters. But LaGuardia, the good news for those on the Delta airliner jet was that Harrison Ford was not the pilot of the plane. Okay, that's the good news. But
he turned out to be a pretty good pilot.
Yeah,
well, he's alive.
Multiple broken bones, though.
But
the most shocking part about the Harrison Ford story, he was in that small plane accident. Well, I guess we
Los
didn't really
Angeles.
Set it up.
Yeah.
Is that he has an adult son who's talking about his father's condition.
Why?
Because Hans is always the beautiful, you know, young, virile hero of Star Wars, and
he's actually a kind of
tottering old man who maybe shouldn't be riding planes.
Well, he's 72.
I don't know. He's walking around Great Barrier.
72,
that,
so he's not exactly a tottering old man.
I said that for Alan.
You said what for me?
That he was a tottering old man.
I take great offense at that.
I know you do. That's why I said it.
Yeah, you were great in Indiana Jones as well, Alan, and you still look the same. But the Delta jetliner, scary stuff. So close to the water.
Its nose was literally next to the water.
Right.
And could have been Sully Sullenberger all over.
Well, the news today, the Delta jetliner that skidded and smashed through a fence at LaGuardia Airport has been removed from the runway. Cranes were used overnight to get rid of the plane or move the plane out. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey said this morning that runway 13 had not yet been reopened. The airport has two runways. So this begs the question, if the airport has two runways, why is one numbered 13?
Well, if you're superstitious, it's probably not a good choice.
Well, I think one and two would work pretty well if you had two runways.
It goes back to the days when it was an airfield and they had lots of little short runways for little planes, like the kind that Harrison Ford was flying in California yesterday.
Yeah.
And
well,
now they have jetliners and they only could have two that are long enough to accept jetliners.
Terribly frightening. And six people were hurt, but everybody's going to be okay. The nose of the plane, feet from Flushing Bay. And Harrison Ford also going to be okay. The show is, the guy who will email in saying, well, Joe wouldn't let this happen.
I got one already from Tony.
All right, what does Tony want to hear?
She says, I don't want to hear about Alan's grade school stuff. I want to hear about important things like the unemployment dropped 2.1% since 2014.
Okay.
And all like that, Bureau of Labor Standards.
The thing about the plane is, you know, I always take it as a matter of just acceptance that if the plane goes, they've really done their check and it's safe. And this all happened during a time when the weather was very flexible. It was changing. There was a icy fog coming in.
Yeah.
So it really does make me wonder, and I hope someone is looking at who makes those calls on whether to stop or go. I mean, I have my problems. You've all heard my issues with airlines. But one of the things I always accept is that if they say we can't go because of weather, listen to them.
Yeah. That plane was in the air circling. I mean, you have to land sometime.
Well,
but
no,
not
no,
there,
go to a
apparently.
Place.
Yeah.
Where?
Go to
South
Carolina?
No, they get rerouted to Albany sometimes. It was a plane that was en route to Philadelphia from Dublin last week that landed in Albany because it had a problem.
But the thing is, the thing of it, as we say, is that the two planes before reported in that they had no trouble, that their wheels just got down on the ground. And
well, it shows you how just a little bit of snow
sure.
can make a big difference.
And how quickly that weather was changing,
Turn.
Too.
It's, well, it was pretty bad down there yesterday.
They were very lucky. I'm really glad nothing happened.
Well, let's take a break. We'll delve into some serious issues coming up. It's the Roundtable. Once again, the email address, roundtable@wamc.org. 22 minutes after 9, we'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Wild Center, Tupper Lake, New York. Open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 to 5, where the wild world of the Adirondacks opens before your eyes. Wildcenter.org. Brattleboro Retreat, presenting their Stand Up to Stigma campaign, working to help people understand mental illness and addiction. BrattleboroRetreat.org/standup. And Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York. Since 1996, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet. ManixMarketing.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 23 minutes after 9 o'clock. The email address here on the Roundtable is roundtable@wamc.org. It's the panel, and sometimes things are serious, and sometimes they're a little not so serious.
I agree with that.
We have emails.
Yeah, we have a lot.
Okay,
actually.
Anything worth noting?
Okay, so Tony says, runways are named by a number between 01 and 36, which is generally the magnetic... Azimuth?
Oh, azimuth.
Azimuth
sure.
of the
yeah.
runway's heading in
Brilliant.
Degrees. A
That's
runway numbered 09 points east 90-something. Runway 18 is south, runway 27 points west, and runway 36 points to the north. Okay,
that's,
so...
That's very interesting.
That did not know that.
That was
yeah.
good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, right. And then... what?
No.
Right, okay, and then and PJ says, if losing an hour of sleep because of the time change, why not go to bed an hour earlier to make up for the difference? No need for reentry experts then. It's not rocket science. I get it.
Aha!
It's a joke. But also, you can't just do that. It's not, you know, it's not as easy as snapping your fingers and going to sleep an hour earlier.
Well, you get up at 1:30, right?
No, I get up at 2:30, but this morning...
Except for Sunday, then it'll be 1:30.
But this morning, it was earlier. Mm. And, no, I'm a basket case when it comes to this. Okay. We got that. And let's see. Irene says, daylight saving the standard time has always been controversial. Are we doing it the right way? No.
Should we continue to do it at all?
Well, I think not.
Okay.
It was done brighter
it
earlier
does originally for trains, right? They wanted to standardize and
well, that's not what I heard.
I
heard it was for maximizing the time that kids could help out on the farms, but...
Yeah, that's what I heard.
You know, we'll have to get
all
an
of these
I'm sure one of our...
Universal times.
Outdated.
Universal timekeeping was the trains, making the trains run on time. So.
One of our listeners will have the absolute answer for
I'm
us
sure.
in
well.
A moment at Roundtable at
WAMC. Oh, boy, we've gotten so much mail on this. For a subject that nobody wanted to hear about, we've gotten a lot of mail.
Why do you look at me that way? I'm
no,
the one who
no,
gave
no,
you
no.
the topic.
No. I love you. I think you're great.
All right.
I
want
point. To talk about elephants.
Okay.
Yeah, that's coming
Jeff
up.
Jeff says, I'd love to hear about the history and experiences of the panel. I don't think it's inappropriate at all.
Okay.
In fact, if you want to contextualize it, you might say it gives your audience slight insight into your points of view and credibility, but that would be nonsense. It's just entertaining. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Fair enough.
We love you for that. And Joe says, if losing an hour of sleep causes you a heart attack, you have bigger issues to worry about. Well, it's easy for you
but
to say.
But if this study is true, and as Mike says, it's a small sample size. But if it increases at 25%, that's a pretty big deal, and that's a good reason WAMC is declaring a holiday on the Monday after the time change. Thank you, Alan.
And Ann says, the numbers on the runways, e.g., runway 13 signifies the compass direction of the runway minus the last zero so the pilot knows the direction. Older pilots are better than younger pilots. After all, they are still alive.
Except Harrison Ford, obviously.
Well, you know, he got praise for the way he handled that engine fatality.
By the way, if I'm going to fly a plane, it's going to have at least two engines. Single engine? I mean, one goes down, you're done.
And probably you don't want a movie star or celebrity driving. There's a long record of these guys going down.
True, John and the
Kennedy,
bigger you are, the bigger John you Denver, are, the more you need that extra engine.
Right. But the good news is...
That was a shot.
That was a shot.
Where he landed, it was a short putt to the cup. So it was, I think he made it in three. It was a par.
He was praised for avoiding the nearby homes.
Yeah, was 50 yards away from homes. True.
Michael says 13 stands for 130 degrees, the compass direction of the runway.
All right, we got this now.
Oh, we got that much.
Okay,
we got that much. And we got a lot on runways. Boy, I suppose.
What's the scariest thing that ever happened to you on a runway, Rosemary? You travel all the time in your work.
Oh, there are noises all the time, like a crash or a knock, and the flight attendants walk by, and everybody's saying, what is that? And then, what is that? And they go, oh, I'll check for you. Like, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
So I think the worst thing is that they don't talk to you. They treat you like children.
My best was, I think it was Newark. We're taking off for Florida. Full speed. You know, when they're finally taking off, you finally hit that second gear or third gear.
Right.
Slammed on the brakes. No, this was in New York City.
Oh, boy.
And then we sat for an hour and a half, and they never told us why.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's annoying.
I once landed at LaGuardia, and they covered the plane with foam.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it on fire?
They knew you were on it?
No. I was on it. I have no idea.
They don't tell you. They
were saying that when you land, because the runways are rather short, they're on the short side, still safe, but on the short side, that you come down pretty hard, as opposed to some other airports where you have these long runways.
Yeah.
And sometimes
you
feather right in.
No. Is that a shot?
No,
it's
not
a,
at all. It's
Reagan
different.
Is an airport that when you take off, you have to go straight up.
Yeah, Reagan is, and because of flight controls, because of the, you know, the White House and stuff, you got to take a bend right away. So there's some airports that are known for abrupt starts and stops.
You said short.
Well, I wasn't intending that to be a...
Flying in the fog in Sarajevo, which is surrounded by mountains, is terrifying,
yeah,
too. But I actually, yeah, I mean, they train for that. And again, while I make my shots at airlines, the talent of the pilots and the ability of people to know when you can fly and when you're not is something that you can rely on. I just wish they would talk to us more.
I would think New York City and the major metro areas have to be the scariest and most dangerous at times because of the traffic. There's just so much up there. Sarajevo probably a little lighter on the traffic.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm. All right, listen.
So, you're done with it?
Well, we have to go to a break, and then we'll get the complaints for not doing anything of substance in the first half hour.
Okay.
It's roundtable at WAMC.org. That's the email address to complain. Let's take a break, and then we'll reconvene the panel on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Friday morning. 9:33 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain here, you there. The email address is roundtable@WAMC.org. And
James says, Ray, you're awesome.
James, right back at you.
Yeah.
Although I have no evidence to support that, but
I think he knows what he's talking about.
Okay, fair enough.
You are awesome.
No, I was talking about him.
Oh.
I don't know him, so he might be awesome, he might not, but we'll just say he's awesome.
Well,
James, awesome. Anything else?
No, we've had about 230 things about degrees and LaGuardia. That's enough of that now.
So runways. We now know about runways.
We've heard you, and we thank you all.
And you have often said, without hyperbole, that we have the smartest listeners in the world, and now we know they know more about airport runway construction than any listeners in the world.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
And then me, also.
Mike, obviously. And you also know railway
timetables. And then we've got a lot of people with solutions on, you know, what to do about re-entry Monday after spring forward.
Anything worth reading?
Well, let's, for example, take Tom. In winter, turn clocks back 2 hours every week. 12 weeks later, take off one day, no heart attacks.
Right, now that's a good
you
idea.
See?
All you
right.
See? You said so, don't you see?
Special national holiday. Shorten the day.
Okay, to the roundtable from Ricky. Am I mistaken? I thought the fun drive had ended. The frivolous commentary tells me otherwise.
I see. All right. Well, then send
That's
us some
your
money.
Fault. I want to get to something serious.
Okay, let's go.
Okay,
so.
Here we
okay.
go. One more, and then we'll dispense okay. with the frivolity.
Okay, if I can find one, I'm going to give it to you. In Harrison Ford's defense, he was able to make the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
Okay, all right. Han Solo, right. Very good.
Yeah. Okay, and like that. And then we had from Peter, and it's Nimrod, right?
Is right, Nimrod. Yeah.
Goes the way of those giant Buddhas.
Yes.
This means war on world culture. But it's time to break out our drones with Hellfire missiles. Panel discussion.
Okay, thank you for going right where we're going. An Iraqi official says government forces are pushing their offensive against the Islamic State group and expect soon to reach the outskirts of the militant-held city of Tikrit. That's Saddam Hussein's hometown, if you recall. It's all disgusting, but one of the culturally disgusting things that made news yesterday was that ISIS has basically obliterated a hugely historic archaeological site in Nimrud.
Yeah, because it was they were worshiping, according to the ISIS people, false idols.
Correct.
And this goes back to
Abyssinian times.
1,000 years B.C.
Yeah.
So
okay, I have two things that I want to say on this.
Go.
First is this whole thing makes me really happy for British colonialists who have taken a lot of heat for their policy of going into countries like Greece, like Iraq, and scooping up cultural heritage and bringing it all to the British Museum. I wish they had scooped up more in Iraq, because the only stuff that will be preserved from there, other than what's undug, and I don't think the ISIS people will go after that, is now in London. So that's number one. There is a reason for people who care about world culture to have taken it away from its original places.
In other words, those people can't be trusted?
Exactly. Yes, that is what I mean. And I would say the same about my own people in Rome. When the Christians came in, they stripped away marble and gold and building material off of pagan structures to build new churches. And that should not have happened either. It's the same thing.
People do this because they obviously do it because they disagree with the previous regime or the ancient regime that they have problems with. But it's a very visual way to offend
yes.
the Western world
yep.
that respects that history. And the visual, it reminds me, the Taliban was doing this before 9/11. They were destroying, I think, Hindu temples.
The giant Buddhas and the carved
Buddhas,
in the mountains.
Right? Yes. And shooting rockets at them and smashing them. And it's so offensive and so painful and so hurtful. I think that motivates them to do it, because they know there was a video on the New York Times website earlier this week of ISIS knocking over statues in a museum and smashing artifacts that were just gorgeous. And
okay, here's one other thing I want to say about this. American troops have done the same thing. The only difference is we don't film it and make a big deal about it. Our troops have been responsible for all kinds of damage in Iraq. We didn't protect the museums in Baghdad that were also
looted.
Attacked. And we have done the same in the first Gulf War, and we didn't show it. We don't know. We, the American people, because of bad coverage and a government that hides things, we don't know the extent of the environmental damage we've done, and we don't even care about the people we've killed. Sorry.
But it insults the culture of the people that you're invading when you do something like that. It has symbolic and it's a way to really inflict a lot of pain on people.
This is depressing on a number of levels, but I think at the core this is depressing because this has been going on for thousands of years. Cultures have been doing this to other cultures. And you'd think at this time we would be beyond it. But as a human race, 3,000 years ago, a blink of an eye, and we still do the same
things. Well, you're right. The Romans got rid of Carthage, burned it to the ground, put salt in the grass and the ground so they couldn't grow more.
When the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003, and they pulled down statues of Saddam Hussein, should they not have done that because they would, in the future, have historical value?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's completely mindless damage. Why do we have the war at all? But yes, mindless damage like that is crazy. It's also really a propaganda effect in the middle of Sarajevo. The National Library was shelled and burned, and that was used as massive publicity and arousing of feelings against Serbs who were on the attack. And, you know, years later you find out that, well, maybe all those books and valuable manuscripts were not lost. They were spirited out. Some have appeared on the black market. I mean, you know, there's... This is a propaganda thing, not just a cultural
And remember, the cultural effect is not quite as bad nowadays where there are electronic and other means of recording some of the information contained in these artifacts. In the old days, they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
There may have been a drawing somewhere.
Like the Romans, what the Romans did, we don't know.
Do you guys think if ISIS or IS had had a nuclear bomb, they'd use it?
I
fear that they would, yeah. And they seem to be on a suicidal mission anyway.
Well, I don't know that they know that. In other words, I think that the real question is, are they really just bad people who know that they're bad people and doing this kind of stuff? Or are they so convinced of their own, you know, infallibility or their own stuff, would they do that and say, okay, we'll suffer whatever consequence there is as a result of this?
I fear that could be the case.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
Well, the whole thing about this is that to protect culture is not the job of one people or one culture. Of course, they're always going to try to wipe out the other. This is a matter of the international community acting. And that's exactly what we don't have. We've tried to defang the United Nations. They could have moved in. You could have peacekeepers who would protect museums and sites like this one. And we don't allow it. We're not as responsible.
We're
not doing it. But
the human race,
the West should be putting money and effort into this. What's lost in Iraq does matter to us, and yet we don't do it.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. You can also go to our webpage, wamc.org/roundtable. There is a post that says 3615 panel. You can comment there as well. It is 9:42 on a Friday morning edition.
Rich says, hooray, Rosemary, a serious subject. Artifacts and a legal war do not mix. Bush 41 and 43 started this terrible war. And why are we still there? ISIS is a creation of Bush. That's from Rich. And Eric says, today's problems stem from the remapping of the Middle East by the Brits and others 100 years ago. So sorry that they neglected to steal more artifacts. That's an answer to you, I think, Rosemary.
Yes.
I think this has been going on a lot longer than the Brits were there.
The Brits have a lot of the British Museum, and there's a lot of stuff from the very site they were raping this past week.
What I'm saying is the quote-unquote trouble or the strife or the warfare in the Middle East certainly was going on before the Brits rolled in.
Yeah.
And Jasmine says, I think it's extreme to applaud colonialists for thievery of cultural relics based upon the actions of ISIS, especially when the bulk of the countries that stole these items from are quite stable and could use the museum revenue. There are a few benefits of colonialism, but this is not one of them.
I just so disagree with that. I mean, we're on a rant against culturally insensitive acts like taking away treasures. And yet the British saved much of the Parthenon. We would not have anymore. The French were going in there and shooting up in Athens. And it was the British who stole the Elgin margins. Yes, they did. Someday maybe the marbles will end up back in Greece, but they're protected now. And I really do wish they had taken more out of Iraq. And soon we might be talking about animals. Zoos are getting a lot of bad publicity now, and yet they have become repositories of animal genetic material that are being lost in the wild. I'm glad that we have these things.
I'm glad you brought up animals, because as we hit the air yesterday, this was a story that, funny stuff, but not kind of a big story. Just crossed about 9 o'clock yesterday morning, the long battle to remove elephants from the Ringling Brothers Circus looks like it is now over. And this is quoting from the Washington Post. It was 1998 when Kenny, a 3-year-old Asian elephant, was brought out to perform during 2 Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey circus shows in Jacksonville. He sat out a third show that day, but was led into the arena to watch. He died overnight in his stall, and his death triggered a series of events. There was a whistleblower that tipped off people for the ethical treatment of animals, and it contacted the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That agency eventually brought a complaint that charged the circus with failing to handle the elephant in a way that did not cause behavioral stress and unnecessary discomfort. And at that point, things started to change. So as of yesterday, the Ringling Brothers Circus announced that as of, I think, 2017, no more elephants. And you thought that was a big deal. Rosemary.
Yeah, it is. It's animal rights is becoming a huge issue in this country, and this is one example of the power of campaigns against them, and also of a lot of investigative reporting. Deb Nelson, a fabulous investigative reporter, has written about the elephants and mistreatment of them in the circus. I'm sad by it. I'm going to go home and watch Dumbo again tonight.
You're saddened that they won't be there anymore?
I went to circuses as
Me
a
too.
Kid. And I really liked the old narrative that their keepers loved them like children and took care of them. And I'm sad that it came to this. I really don't see it as undignified to see those magnificent animals being controlled by humans, but I always thought that they were being treated well, and the reporting changed my mind about that. I had a butcher as a father, and so I always tend to think human rights people are nutsy. They've just gone way too far.
Animal rights people.
And people who, you know, won't eat meat.
But elephants are clearly intelligent critters.
They're
you can just look at them and know.
And if you want to see mistreatment of them, I mean, go to places like Thailand and India. And, oh, my God, they have elephants on the street, busy streets with cars and people and no wildness anywhere. And they're drugged and they're people pay to feed them peanuts. It's horrendous. They're used like beggars. So I don't want to see any of that. And yet somehow, yes, I'm saddened by this. The Ringling Brother was a tradition. Yeah.
And yet, Rosemary, and I say this in all seriousness, your father was a butcher.
Yep.
I'm finding myself really finding red meat something I don't want to eat anymore because I keep thinking of those dead animals that are, you know. So you're sympathetic to the elephants. There are many vegetarians who are, pardon me, sympathetic to anybody who eats red meat because, you know, you see those beautiful cattle on the way home on Route 41, and I see them, and then I know that sooner or later they're going to be on somebody's dinner table.
I don't know. I mean, that's humanity. We need protein. That's why our brains are bigger. And animal protein has been that's why the human race is supreme. So I don't want them mistreated, but I do want animals raised so I can eat. I also like fur coats. I know that's really bad.
Okay, that's a great spot for take a break. Roundtable at WAMC.org and roundtable at WAMC.org. Coming up, we'll talk to Mike Spain about what's in the Times Union today.
Support for WAMC comes from the Springfield Museums, presenting hometown hero Theodore Geisel at their Dr. Seuss birthday celebration tomorrow from 10 to 5, springfieldmuseums.org. Field Goods, providing year-round deliveries of produce from local farms for pickups at workplaces or community sites, and offering workplace wellness programs, field-goods.com. And Third Eye Associates Limited, life planning, transition planning, and wealth management, registered investment advisors with offices in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Red Hook, New York, thirdeyeassociates.com.
Opera does good with the bumper music. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:48 on a Friday morning. An interesting edition of the panel today. Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff here in for Joe Donahue. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. Mike, what's the making news in the TU?
Well, one interesting story was, not a big story, but it's about this effort by a guy in Albany, a music professor at the College of St. Rose, Bruce Rotter, who's trying to get support for a museum, a special kind of museum in Albany. He envisions an Albany Museum of Political Corruption, says Albany is a good place to have it. And, you know, he's been talking about this for a couple of years. We've written stories, people have interviewed him about it. And it seems like there's a lot of, camp in it, a lot of silliness. It sort of seems like something you'd see on Comedy Central. But former New York gubernatorial candidate Zephyr Teachout, the Fordham Law professor who challenged Andrew Cuomo in the Democratic primary last fall, who has written, books about political corruption, has spoken about it. She is a quite serious opponent to political corruption, I guess. And she has agreed to participate in the.
Well, she wrote a book about it.
Yeah, about corruption, right?
So she'll be on the board,
and she's going to be on the board of this sort of embryonic museum. It hasn't found funding. It hasn't found a location.
Right.
As Bruce Rotter envisions it, it would have a lot of like a three men in a room, and it might have some other statues and some other artifacts that relate to politicians in Albany who've been corrupt and across New York State. I mean, there's a lot of puns. Almost every single thing he envisions is a pun, and it's very easy to make light of it. But Zephyr Teachout kind of lending her name to it makes you wonder. I mean, it is a discipline that should be studied and people should be aware of.
He's been talking about this for a couple of years now, and there have been some hilarious press moments.
There's been endless emails to me about this.
However, it would seem to me that if you were actually going to put one of these in a building somewhere, you best have some lawyers on the board of directors. Because the first time you put a living politician in the Museum of Corruption, get ready for some ramifications.
Well, no, not if you have, not that I'm a big follower of this or believer in it, but not if you have a group that puts in, is very careful, as you say, lawyers, and who says, okay, if Shelley Silver is convicted and if he goes or indicted, and you just say that, I don't see how.
Well, one important thing to know is, and we all are aware of this, that what's necessarily corrupt is not necessarily illegal, and that's a big problem. Things that, you know, I contribute to your political campaign, I get access to you, and then you facilitate by pushing a bill that favors my business.
They better own their own property and keep up with their taxes.
I think most of this, I said this to Mike, I think most of this is smoke and mirrors. I can't see a museum on this. People are not even interested in the actual corruption going on reported in the papers, from what I see, much less paying money to go into a museum.
But Rosemary,
and what artifacts are there? What are you going to do? How are you going to show three men in a room?
Well, you'll show a picture from the paper of the guys
being brought
into.
Okay, that's a book. That's not a museum.
An interactive museum, certainly a virtual museum would be something that maybe.
I don't know.
Well,
I think he's just getting a lot of publicity, including this time.
Okay,
right now.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well,
sorry, Mike, for the confusion.
As I said, I mean, I think you're right. I think all the publicity that I've seen in the past, you know, our columnist Chris Churchill interviewed him a couple years ago when he came up with this idea.
Yeah, it's a cute story.
And it is. It's a fun story. It makes a good conversation. This is the same fellow who lobbied to get Trader Joe's to open an Albany store. You know, so he's a populist and certainly, it's a popular topic to make fun of politicians who are corrupt. But, as I said, Zephyr Teachout is a serious person. I mean,
I don't think
you've
she's
interviewed
spending
her,
a lot of time
she's
on
She's a very
this,
good
though.
Friend
she's
of
a
yours.
Name. She's a name. She is. She's a very good friend. And her stuff on corruption is fabulous. Read her book. The Supreme Court has. But in this case, I mean, she put her name on a board.
But it does an injustice because people don't have the slightest idea, A, who their legislators are. That's true. You say, well, I know who my legislator is, but most people don't know. And as you get down to New York City, they really don't know. So because there's less press coverage of it. But just let somebody say corruption. Everybody says, ah, yeah, they're all a bunch of corrupt people. So I don't know that it does a real service to the real work that has to be done on what this legislature is and what they're doing and what their policy issues are.
But having a hall of shame, so to speak, might make people more interested and more aware. It might educate people because you know the Comedy Central, you know, Jon Stewart has brought a lot of corruption to the forefront, and people are aware of it who may not have been aware of it because he presents it in a somewhat humorous way and somewhat of a sarcastic way. So I mean, this might help some people understand how serious a problem corruption is and motivate them to change it.
And that's in today's Times Union, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's timesunion.com. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org.
And we've got a lot of letters, and I'm not reading them all.
No,
but,
too many.
But Mark says, good morning, panel. I'd like to thank Rosemary for pointing out the West is also guilty when it comes to the destruction of artifacts. And we need someone as sharp as Rosemary to investigate places like Ferguson so we can further uncover what's going on up there.
I think the federal panel that Eric Holder put together did a pretty good job of that, actually.
Yes. And then there are so many more. As an archaeologist, I have to completely disagree with Rosemary's comment about the British colonial appropriation of artifacts, although it might be nice to have taken some more artifacts from sites like this to preserve them.
Well, that's what she said.
For history. Wait, she said, although it might be nice, artifacts are only important when they're in context.
when they're destroyed and smashed.
That's less important.
You can always put them back into the context, but you, once they're smashed, they're gone.
She makes a point.
And along those same lines, Rachel says, British Museum's taking of cultural objects might be seen as a saving grace now, but where should the line be drawn? Should we be taking works now from countries in Africa in anticipation of wars to come, or should we wait for diplomatic resolution?
That's a great question.
Yeah. And if we had an international community that looked at this, UNESCO, which designates World Heritage Sites, and you actually did take steps when cultural heritage was in danger. Didn't we do that in Europe during World War II? Wasn't that the whole Monuments Men
terrible
movie,
by the way.
I liked it.
So before we close, I'm sorry. I have to bring this up. I know Rosemary poo-poos this sort of thing.
Sure.
A NASA spacecraft is closing in on the dwarf planet Ceres after a nearly eight-year journey. Plans call for Dawn to slip into orbit around Ceres early today to begin a 16-month mission. Unlike other orbit captures, but the maneuver happens gradually and automatically. Now, Ceres is the largest object in the asteroid belt, Ceres, if you prefer, between Mars and Jupiter. There are all these asteroids between the two. It contains rocky remnants from the formation of the solar system. So this is the first time. It's basically what is known as a dwarf planet. And what it is a planet, they think, that is one that just never grew, never accreted more rock and ice and became a full-size planet. And it gives a great window into the origins of the solar system. Now, does anybody find this interesting but me, or am I out of my mind?
I don't. I'm back in chemistry class. He's droning on about titration. I'm eating liverwurst sandwiches in the back.
But this is big.
That's disgusting.
I know, it's true, though.
It's a very big topic. You have to have an interest in the history of the universe and the family.
But you don't. Ultimately, our struggle here as people is to find out what went wrong
on Mars.
Why we are here. What on earth am I? If you're not a religious person and if you don't know by faith what you are doing here and why you are here, then you have to figure out why you're here. In order to do that, you need to know what is out there.
I am not disputing that this is important. I am very glad that there are people studying it, and I support money for this space program, but I don't get it. It's like Higgs and Bose. I said that. Okay, that the whole understanding of the whole world was in that, but I can't sit here and
Higgs
talk about
Higgs-Boson.
Yeah, that one.
Higgs and Bose. It's a law firm. All right.
Okay,
and
so
then, of course, Mars had an ancient ocean.
Is.
This was in the New York Times today.
Yeah, wow. Whoa.
That's pretty cool.
You don't think that's important?
I don't know what it means.
No, that's huge.
Well, it suggests there was the potential for life on Mars.
That's right.
The conditions that life emanated in the Earth were present in Mars and maybe some.
Sure. Give me one fossil on Mars. Give me one fossil in that ancient ocean and everything changes.
Yeah, you got a point. Just like Jessica had a point when she wrote, "My husband and I founded one of the first sustainable butcher shops in the country. Flesh is grass-fed and organic meats are now owned the Apple Store Meat Company. We obviously don't believe in eating and selling meat, but I don't agree with Alan's approach to red meat." See, you like that?
Yeah, I
like that.
Well, on that happy note, we'll end the show today. And it's been a great week. I really appreciate you.
We
all
love you, Ray.
There.
You've been terrific.
Joe will be back on Monday. Mike Spain from the Times Union, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Rosemary Armeo, enjoy the emails from today's program. I'm sure that we'll forward you plenty.
International Women's Day, Apalka Gallery, come and hear us.
Now, where is
it
going to us?
On Sunday?
Sage College Gallery.
Okay, and you can find, I believe, a link to that. They're an underwriter, I believe, of ours, so you can find a link on our website, Apalka Gallery.
Very cool.
And good luck with that. Alan, good luck eating grass clippings or whatever you'll be doing this weekend.
I've been eating canned peas, just one point on the Weight Watchers.
Right you are, old boy. Thanks, everyone. It's been a great week. We appreciate it. Hour number two of the Roundtable on the way.